Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. Well, I would like to update all of you. We went to court today, my daughter-in-law and myself, for the appeal of Denver Jarvis. Now, Denver Jarvis was already sentenced to prison time and 20 years probation. But Denver Jarvis is the young man who poured the flammable liquid down Michael's back. Now, if you've listened to anything about this entire saga that has lasted for almost 3.5 years now, you know that the two boys that actually committed the act, pouring the alcohol and lighting the Bic lighter, accepted the 10 years in prison and 20 years or so each of them for probation. The third boy, who was the one who actually organized most of this, I don't even to this day believe that he in his mind was what happened, but it is what happened, and he's the one who, if you'll excuse the pun, ignited the entire thing. In order for him to be prosecuted, we needed the testimony from Denver Jarvis and from Jesus Menendez. Both of them testified against Matthew Bent. And, of course, their testimony was integral into the sentencing and the eventual guilty rendering from the judge in regard to Matthew Bent as far as being the one who pretty much orchestrated that entire day. So today we went into court and Jarvis's representatives asked originally to get some of the sentence changed to less time in prison. And that was denied by the judge. However, they did ask for less probationary period. 20 years is a long time to be on probation. So because we are grateful for his testimony and because we have never been out for blood or been about the eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth rendering, we relented and accepted the offer from his attorneys to drop 10 years off of the probationary period. It was accepted very, very nicely by the young man himself, and I think we feel good about it. I think it was a way for us to not lighten the act itself, but still show an act of kindness towards him because he acted like an adult at the end of the day and testified against the other young man, who may not have gotten any kind of reprimand had they not made their testimony. So, I don't know what will happen with Jesus. We have not been asked to do anything in that arena yet, and I don't know what will happen after this is recorded. So we'll have to wait and see. But I do feel like I like practicing what we preach, and I like the fact that my family was strong enough and courageous enough to say today, yes, that's okay with us, that seems fair, and that seems right. So I commend my son, my grandson, and my daughter-in-law, and think that they did a good thing. And if we are going to repair all the damage that's been done, not just to our family, but to all the families out there who have been hurt by things like this, this is a big part of the healing. So, again, I'm proud of them and pleased with them, and I think that this is a good way to move on and to feel good about themselves. Now, of course, today when I got home, I did some more research. And I'm sorry to say that because of things that I learned in the courthouse today, I talked for a while with the assistant state attorney in Broward County. She's an awesome woman, worked very hard for my Michael, and I've seen her do a lot of really courageous things in the courtroom. And she's a big part, because she deals with adolescents, she's a big part of what's going on in the world of the punishment that gets doled out to an adolescent, a child that commits a crime. Of course, there's still a lot of controversy over how they should be treated, whether they should be treated as an adult, regardless of the crime, whether they should be treated in accordance to their age, regardless of the crime. So she was in California this week and spent some time in their detention centers, learning and finding out about how they're dealing with some of the same things we're dealing with. So, of course, we talked a little bit about that, and I heard a rumor today that one of the school shootings was about a video game. So I hadn't heard anything about that on the news, so I kind of got into that arena so I could get some more information for myself. I did not find anything that verifies the rumor that I was told today about the young man who took the lives of all the kids in Sandy Hook, acting out some kind of a video game. I did not find any kind of proof of that or anything written about that whatsoever. But what I did find was just as concerning. I found out that since 1996 until today, there have been 391 people killed in schools. Elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, vocational schools, and colleges. Not all have been children, but probably 60% have been children. And probably half of the young people, in most cases, that took the lives of all those people, ended up taking their own lives. Not all. There were some interesting stories that I had never heard before. And I found out that there's even been a couple pretty sad shootings with involving 17-year-olds where the young man involved showed no remorse, nothing. As a matter of fact, in court, he made obscene gestures to everyone in the courtroom. Now, when we've talked about bullies, we've talked an awful lot about the fact that the bullies often are the ones that need the most help. And I can't imagine anything being more blatant than that. Being in a courtroom with authoritative figures from one end of the room to the other and being that kind of rude and disrespectful, other than somebody who needs a lot more help than anybody realized. So my upside of this was to see what I could find about what they're doing to stop some of the violence. And I did find a school violence, weapons and crime and bullying site that gave me a little input, and I'm going to do some more research on it. And I'm going to read this to you. I'll try not to make it too boring. It's really quite interesting, and it's kind of a story about someone as well. But I did want to mention that today, when I got home from court and my teenage grandchildren came home, I, as most of you know, I have a 20-year-old here. I have an 18-year-old here. I have a 16-year-old here, a 15-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And we talked about what happened in court today, and we talked about a few other things. And they told me today that in one of their schools, they have all been warned against videoing any kind of altercations. If a child is caught videoing any kind of altercation between other students, a fight, an assault, anything, they will be suspended, or they've been threatened with suspension. I have real mixed emotions about that. Part of me understands why they did that, because kids are taking the videos and posting them online immediately, and then before authorities even have an opportunity to find out what happened, what's going on, or put it in a semblance of organization, everybody's already talking about it and passing judgment. So that I get. But what I don't get is why we're talking, why we can't just say to the kids, and I get that all the kids aren't going to pay any attention, but they're still not. There's still going to be some kids that do whatever they want to do and try not to get caught. So I do think that there should be a way to explain to the kids what happens if they show a video like that before any other adult in charge, in a leadership role, has an opportunity to sort out what happened so they're ready to meet with all the questions and all of the media and the parents and everybody that's going to be upset about something like that. As you know, last night I talked about the one video that went viral about the girls beating up the other girl on the school bus. That was very upsetting. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God, why isn't anybody stopping that? It was very upsetting for me to see. And until last night, I didn't know that the one girl who had been the main aggressive teenager actually was Baker acted after that. So again, another major, major cry for help. So wouldn't it be better for the rest of the world to know all of that story until they just see that video? So at any rate, I have mixed emotions about that, and I'm looking forward to hearing what all of you feel about that. Here's what I found in the school violence laws. Federal laws are playing a very important role in controlling the incidence of school violence across the United States of America. Billy Wolf's story is known to everyone. Billy Wolf was being bullied by two guys from Fayetteville High School, Arkansas. These guys were constantly beating him either in the bathroom or on the school bus or on the way to his home or in the nearby shop. He was being beaten even in the coaching class. These incidents are not of one day. They took place over several days. But these incidents had hampered the mental state of Billy Wolf. His parents had taken the issue to the parents of the children who were bullying him, and even to the principal of the high school, but they did nothing. They had just given them consolation. Students who were troubling Billy Wolf got more confidence because no action had been taken against them. So they started torturing him even more. Therefore, Billy's parents, left with no choice other than going to the court. Court paid great attention towards the matter. And on the basis of witnesses and evidences, court has given the judgment in favor of Billy Wolf. This was the first case related to school violence that had reached court. Session judge of that time, S.M. Smith, had said that it was the duty of the school administration to solve all these issues that are related to school violence. If schools are unable to tackle it, or if it involves some act of killing, then the parents or schools should knock on the doors of the court, else school authorities should try to solve it at their level. It is their duty to promote peace and prosperity in the society and in the country. They should provide a friendly environment to the kids so that they can develop better and with the right attitude. Schools should teach that even weak people are having the fundamental right to live. The session judge had said that Billy Wolf's parents can easily ask for compensation if they want. Billy Wolf and his parents had many troubles because of these students, so getting compensation is their right. The story does not end here. Other incidents like Columbine High School massacre, Bath School disaster, Virginia Tech massacre are among the biggest examples of school violence occurring in schools. Students who are strong are living without fear and troubling other kids, whereas students who are weak are scared of going to school. Excuse me. Now the officials from the anti-bullying police have become compulsory in colleges and high schools. Parents are allowed to take strict action against the schools if they are not doing anything against school violence. They can even knock the doors of police or court. Court and police are there to help parents and children, but still it is the duty of the parents to make their child mentally more strong and powerful so that he or she can tackle these issues properly. They should not be sacred of these, oh, I'm sorry, it says sacred, it must mean scared. They should not be scared of these violent children and should not go down into the depression. Now, this was on a major site, and it sounds to me like a severe case of passing the buck. I don't know about you. I'm interested in hearing what you all have to say tonight about this, but I do think that we need to give consideration to many things that was said in this posting. Number one, if you ask once, if you go to school once and you're worried about the safety of your child, do not, I repeat, do not push your luck. If you think your kid is in trouble, it is your job first and foremost to protect your child. So if that means taking your child out of that school and going to the courts, if you can't get into the courts because they're overloaded, my suggestion to you is to go directly to the media. Because let me tell you something, media gets things done faster than any other organization I've ever seen in my life. So it is your job. You cannot pass the buck on this like this posting passes the buck. And you can't make your child any stronger than he was born. You can build his character. You can build his morale. You can even help a little bit with his self-esteem. But you cannot make him strong or weak or anywhere in between. He's already that or isn't that. So, to say to a kid, you know, pull up your bootstraps or whatever that saying used to be and face the music is the biggest unkindness you can do to your child. But again, like we talked about last night, before you jump in the lake, test the waters. Before you do anything, make sure that you have the entire story. Make sure that you understand everything that's taking place. If that means you have to have a neighborhood kid, somebody that you trust, keep an eye on your kid one day in school and let them come back and report to you what they've seen, do that. Why not? Kids are anxious to help each other, but a lot of times they're afraid to get involved as well. So this is a part of what we talked about a couple weeks ago, organizing a safe place for your children. If that means helping organize a group of kids that's all going to protect each other, and short of them making a gang of their own and getting in more trouble, do that. Do that and see what you can do to help and stop some of this, because this this is getting carried away like that proverbial tiny snowball at the top of Kilimanjaro. When it gets down to the bottom, you can't do anything with it. The only time you can do something with it is before it gets bigger than you are. So that's my advice. Well, certainly everybody is entitled to doing things the way they think is right. But during the research that I've done and during the raising of my children and some of my grandchildren and quite a few other people's children, I will tell you, they need to depend on you. First and foremost, they need to know that you're their safe zone. They know that they can come home and tell you, and you're going to believe what they're telling you, even if you have to do a little research so that you get exactly what is really going on, because you know that they're upset and you know it's maybe a little one-sided. That's all fine. But they have to be able to trust you and depend on you and know that if they come and tell you something, you're going to do something about it. If you're not, then you're like everybody else. And you can't be, because you're their savior. You're what they have. You had them, now they have you. So Let's open up the lines. Miss Shelley is waiting to talk. Let's hear what she's got to say tonight. Hi, Miss Shelley.
Hey, Rainey. How you doing, hon?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing very good, very good. Still coughing a little bit, so I got to be careful of that. I'll make myself laugh. But,
me too.
Other than that, good. Starting to get more and more my energy back. Interesting research. I had heard about that Billy Wolf case. I remember when that was in the news. But I don't remember the aftermath. Did things improve? Do you remember how the story went from there? Did things improve for him after that?
No, I think his parents ended up moving him. I tried to find some more that's more recent, and I didn't. So I think what I'm going to do is tomorrow I'll delve in a little bit deeper and see if I can't find some more information as to what happened to him now, because I'm interested in the outcome of that too. What I do remember is that his parents ended up taking him out of the school. That's what sticks in my head, so that may be what happened.
Yeah, because it sounds so familiar, but I didn't remember the outcome of that particular story. Some of the things you were talking about with that article, sort of like passing the buck back and forth, the school saying they can't do anything, the officials are saying they can't do anything, it falls back on the school and stuff. And it just falls into a lot of what we've been discussing about where you have people in roles that it should be a knee-jerk reaction. It should be, I hate using the word common sense because it's not so common, but the bottom line is that there should be just a gut reaction when you see something not right happening, that you are told to attend to it, to do something about it. And
it should be about responsibility.
Exactly.
And that seems to be lacking in a lot of adults' lives. Responsibility, once you become a grown-up, responsibilities are attached. Along with the bigger shoes and the beard that you got to shave and blah, 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 responsibilities come with all that as well.
Exactly.
And that, I think, is one of our real challenging points, is the fact that, matter of fact, the grandchildren and I tonight, when we talked about all this stuff, we did talk about that. And my oldest grandson said, well, Grandma, it's probably the fault of most parents. And I said, how can you say that? You have friends that have great parents, and they're little brats. And you have friends that you wonder, how they ever survived in a house with those people, and they're wonderful. And he goes, well, that's true. He says, but in most cases, though, it's about whether or not the parents care, which I thought was very astute for a 20-year-old. Of course, my Spikey is pretty good about stuff like that. But he said, it's not so much about how they're leading, Graham, that affects us. We can deal with their imperfections. We just need to know that they're there for us and that they care about us. And I said, geez, you've been listening to my show?
Yeah, and it goes to what we were talking about yesterday. It's like kids don't necessarily need something profound from you. They just need to know that you're approachable and that there's somebody that truly cares about what they have to say. Whether you have an answer or not is not what they're looking for. It's great if you have an answer. It's great if you have advice. It's great if you can give direction that actually helps them to cope. But what they really need, just to know that there's somebody there they can come to unload, to get it off their chest, who will take them seriously and say, you've got a situation here. We're going to have to put our heads together and figure out how to get you through this. But, but I've got your back, and you always make sure you come to me. And then they know that they have a sympathetic ear, somebody who cares. That is sound, and that is very powerful.
Yes, and that's the most important thing for all of us, not just the kids, for each other. I don't choose friends that I can't talk to. I don't have friends that I can't call and say, this is happening, because I'm afraid they're going to share it with everybody, or I'm afraid they're going to pass judgment on me. I don't have friends like that. I surround myself with people that I love and I trust, and I know they love me and trust me. But of course, when you're a child, or a young person, you're still trying to find that way, and you're not really sure who those people are unless you're very, very blessed at an early age, which I don't think a lot of people are. But I do believe that if they know that, if they can surround themselves with people like that, then they probably don't have any problems, not the kind of problems we're talking about at any rate.
Right.
So what did you think about the what did you think about them saying that obviously the teachers are supposed to maintain the safety, the camaraderie, the all of that in the school without any real interference, it's what it sounded like, from the court system. They seem to be all right with having occasional enforcement, which would mean policemen, but not any judgment people, not anybody that can say, okay, well, here's the deal. You know, we don't want to get involved in this because we're not a part of the school system, is kind of what they're saying.
Right, right. Well, I kind of have a twofold reaction to that. Number one, I do think that teachers need to take that role more seriously, and many of them don't. So, so on one hand, I'm like, yeah, okay, I do agree that that's part of the role of a teacher. I don't think it's only the role of the teacher, but I do believe it's partly the role of the teacher. But I also believe that there has to be consequences when that role is not upheld. If a child is not given a safe safe place to come to school, if they're not given a place where they can come and learn, there should be some sort of a consequence to the school for not providing that environment for the children. Ultimately, it's on the teachers and the principal to create an environment that is respectful. And if they're
so then
not
are,
doing
are
it,
you su- are you suggesting that if let's make a pretend scenario. I go to school because I'm upset because somebody's picking on one of the kids, and I say something to the teacher, and 3 days later, nothing has changed. My kid's still coming home, all upset, all fidgety, maybe not bruised or battered or anything, but doesn't want to go back to school because of some kid in this class. So I've talked to the teacher, so now I go back and I talk to the principal. And, of course, in the schools now you got principals and vice principals and this one and that one. So I find somebody who's willing to talk to me, and I go in and I tell them, I've already been to see Mr. So-and-so, and Mr. So-and-so promised me that he would keep an eye on this, and that he thought, you know, that maybe my kid was, you know, being a little sensitive and everything. So I said, okay, you could be right. You know, let's see what happens. But, you know, 3 to 4 days went by, and I'm still fighting with my kid to go to school because he doesn't want to go to school. So I came to you. So the principal looks at me and says, okay, Mrs. Brewer, we're going to check into this. I'm going to find out myself what's going on. So I leave content that now I have somebody on my child's side, and I can send my child back to school the next day because I can say to him, don't worry, so-and-so is going to keep an eye on this, and if anything happens, he's going to be aware of what's going on, and you don't have to be afraid. I mean, that's what I would say, right? Because I've just taken an adult, a professional adult, and that professional adult has led me to believe that he's going to, you know, supervise, do his job, and make sure that everything is okay. So the 2 days later, my grandson comes home, and he has a black eye. And the same kid pushed him over the edge, and they fought. So now my grandson says to me, so, Grandma, I've been suspended for 3 days. I'm sorry, you know, but there's a no tolerance for fighting in the school, and because this guy came after me and I hit him back, I'm in trouble. So now I go to school and I say, look, I came and I talked to you. You gave me your word that you were going to keep an eye on this. Well, we have a no tolerance, Mrs. Brewer. Well, then, if you have no tolerance for this kind of behavior, why is my grandson being bullied?
Exactly.
So I run into another brick wall. And I'm telling you, if I've heard this story once, I've heard this story 1,000 times from parents, from kids, from all kinds of people. And again, I am not going to blame one group of people. But in this instance, we're talking about school, so I'm going to tell the truth about what people tell me. And I said, if I run into a deal like that, then I should have the right to go to the local school board, should be my first step, I would think. And from the school board, everything should be reported. You should always, we've talked about this on many occasions, everything should be logged, and everything that you do and every conversation that you have, you should have logged, so that when you talk to the people who are really going to start paying attention, hopefully, they get everything that you've had going on, and then a judgment call is made.
All right.
But you have to have that recourse. You can't be told, no, the school, the system isn't going to have anything to do with this because this is the job of the school. That can't be. Because everybody has to be watched, Shel.
Well, no, I wasn't saying that they were the only ones, but what I'm saying is that the teachers have to be held more accountable for their lack of involvement. It can't be acceptable. There has to be a consequence. And I'm not saying that they're the only ones responsible, but if the teacher and the principal are made aware that something is happening and they do nothing to rectify the situation and it escalates, they need to be held accountable for that.
Yes. Well, I agree with that.
To be honest with you, it shouldn't even have to escalate. Just their inaction should bring about some sort of consequence. If a parent goes there and say it doesn't escalate, say it just stays the same and this kid is petrified and just, you know, like is making himself physically sick and he can't even go to school, that has the school system, the teachers and the principal have to be held accountable for their lack of involvement. It should not be acceptable. It should not be tolerated, you know. And the fact that there is no consequence that they can pay right now is one of the reasons why they stick their head in the sand and they just ignore the situation, you know. But there should be something in place that can bring about some sort of enforcement to that. And a lot should come about with education. You were talking about yesterday that teachers need to be trained properly on how to deal with bullying, both the person who's
bullying and violence and all of the above. Absolutely.
Right. And
both
the perpetrators and the victims, because they both need help. And we've been saying that from the very beginning. They both need help. The perpetrator, in some cases, the bullied is the one that gets injured more physically, just because of the nature of what we're talking about. But the truth is that in many cases, the bullier, the perpetrator, is the one that's actually the more damaged person.
Yep.
You know,
I agree.
And this way, if things can be dealt with before a situation takes place that goes beyond a point of no return, then you can salvage both the perpetrator and the victim, and you can actually teach both of them how to go on with their lives in a healthier way. You know, but unfortunately, a lot of times these situations are ignored until something horrific happens, and now you're dealing with something where you might be able to help other people move on with their lives, but these two people now are damaged forever, you know, and that's a shame. It should never be allowed to get to that point.
Yeah. Well, and very sadly, it's very possible, and I'm not saying that is what happened. I'm just saying it's very possible that a lot of the things that I talked about tonight, these 391 people who have lost their lives since 1996, just in schools, could have lost their lives because somebody was being picked on and picked on and picked on and picked on and then just lost it.
Exactly.
And that is what it appears to be. It doesn't appear to me when I read these stories that the child or the young adult that perpetrates these horrible violent crimes like Sandy Hook or any of those places, they are absolutely, positively, without a shadow of a doubt, damaged kids. So something has happened to them. Now, whether or not it happened in school or it happened at home, or it happened wherever, wherever they were subjected to the unkindness is what has left them so in such a state of disrepair, you know.
Right.
The one child there that killed his mom and did all those awful things at Sandy Hook, I mean, how can he not have been in really dire distress? I mean, even when you looked at the pictures of him, you could see, you know, here's somebody who most certainly needs the attention of somebody who knows what they're doing. And he didn't get it. He didn't get it.
Even
in some of the some of the other stories that I read tonight, it was teachers and guidance counselors that were killed by kids.
I know
a lot of them, a lot of the 2 and 3 victim scenarios were principal of the school and some kind of head administration and a teacher. So what does
wow.
that tell you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times, a handful of kids that I think just maybe got in their way, or maybe is how they got their motor going to get to this extreme, but then eventually they sought out authoritative figures and killed them. So that's something that somebody who really knows what they're doing should be looking into and figuring out what's going on there, because that tells you a lot right there. Well, and then you also have how many kids actually hurt their parents, how many kids actually plan and plot and with great detail figure out a way to do away with their own mom and dad. So you have to know that something's wrong in that picture as well. Those two brothers, I remember several years ago, who were afraid that dad was not going to give them enough money and let them live the life they were accustomed to, and they were angry with him, and they felt that dad was a little abusive and mom didn't stick up for them, and they killed both of them. And I've never looked up the statistics to things like that, but I suspect I'll be blown away by those, because I think that that's another terrible thing. I mean, it goes way back to Lizzie Borden. And through the years, there's been a lot of crimes, children assaulting their parents. And in most cases, it's because of lifelong, maybe not even abuse is always the reason. A lot of times it's lifelong indifference and making that child feel like they're just not important enough to be looked after, cared for, nurtured, and loved by the people that brought them into the world. And, of course, that's what my grandson said tonight. He said, that's what's most important for all of us, Graham. That's what's most important. He said, especially once you get to be 16 or 17, you know your mom and dad aren't perfect. But as long as you know that they love you, you're already to a point where you can handle their problems. And I said, you know, that's right, because I say that all the time. My parents, I loved them to death, and I knew that they loved me. Were they perfect? Nope. Just like I'm not perfect. Did they do everything by some kind of a book? Absolutely not. They made lots of mistakes, and a lot of times they did things that made me feel like I was the one that was in charge. But they never, ever made me feel like I was alone. And they never, ever made me feel like, no matter what happened, that they wouldn't be standing right there in my corner, beside me, in front of me, behind me, wherever they needed to be. So I guess my grandson's right. That is, singly speaking, the most important thing. And I'd like parents to understand that, as well as all the things we're trying to get all the kids to understand. If you're a mom or a dad, they don't expect you to be perfect, and they don't expect you to make all the right decisions, and they surely don't expect you to know what they're thinking all the time, because you can't. But they do expect to make sure that you really care about them and that you're really there for them. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing for them. So I don't know if a lot of parents get that. And I don't know. I do know that it's a part of life. When you love somebody, you want them to be everything to be perfect for them. And, of course, that starts with them. And a lot of times you want that from everybody you love, your siblings, your parents, your friends. You don't want anybody to think badly of them, so you want to make them as perfect as you can. And sometimes you get disappointed with that. But the knowing that somebody is always there for you is what should always be the most important thing. Did I get you back yet, Shell?
Yeah.
Okay.
I lost my antenna, and then it just wouldn't come back up. So I'm walking around my house trying to get it finally pumped over.
Well, once I see you come back on, I always bring you in right away. So.
Right. So yeah.
But I thought that was pretty good what Spikey said tonight, and that made so much sense to me. And I think he's right on. He's right on the mark with that.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me what you think about what they came home and told me tonight about a kid that takes a video with their phone about an altercation.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, where you said, you know, you understand why the school would say that. But to be honest with you, I think that the rule should be that if they post it, they'll get in trouble. But I don't think we should start telling kids not to record things, because a lot of time that's the only evidence people have of a particular, of something that's done either from a teacher to a student or from a student to a student. I mean, sometimes that's how we've caught, misconduct from an adult also. So I don't think kids should be afraid of capturing something that's going on that would almost protect them, all right? But I think the penalty should be as if they post it without afraid. Because this is actually teaching them to be responsible. If you're gonna go through the recording this, then the next thing you have to do is authorities.
Yeah. Well, and doesn't it make you feel like when somebody tells you that you can't show anybody what's happening in your school, like they're trying to hide something? I think I've lost you again. What I'm saying is if you can't record something like that when you know and you're afraid to get involved in it, and you do take a video and you don't post it anywhere, but a teacher sees you with your phone recording and you get suspended for recording something, for me that's teaching a kid to be not forthcoming, the grandchildren said to me, chances are if somebody does that, they're going to post it. They're not going to think twice about posting it. And I said the same thing. I said, well, then that's when there should be some repercussions. But I feel like it puts a really sneaky connotation on it if you tell them that they can't do that.
Right. I agree. I don't think it's inappropriate. I think that there has to be more to it than you just can't record anything, because then it almost sounds like something's being covered up, or they don't want to accidentally catch a teacher doing something, and then I just don't like the connotation of it.
Me either.
Everybody, this is the information age. This technology is out there, and a lot of times the correct people are being brought to justice because of things like everybody walking around with a phone in their hand, and they can capture some malfeasance happening. In the past, how many times in the past did an innocent person get accused because they were at the wrong place at the wrong time?
Right.
Where now we can actually capture something and make sure that the appropriate person is brought to justice. So I don't think there should be a limitation on it. The limitation should be, what do you do after you've made the recording now? Let's start educating children as to what's the appropriate thing to do. The appropriate thing to do is to make sure that somebody that can take action on it sees it. That's the appropriate
Exactly.
thing.
Exactly. And then you feel like you've done a good deed. you know, it would also build up the morale of the kids who are otherwise afraid of getting involved in anything. So, I do see their point of view about putting it on the internet and doing all that kind of crap before anybody has the time to do any kind of damage control or get both sides of a story or any of that. I get all that. But I still believe that there is a way to explain to kids. I mean, we're talking about, you know, kids that are over the age of 12. They're the ones that are doing stuff like that and older. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that sends out a bad message. You can't tape anything. You know?
Yeah, no, I had the same reaction when you said that, you know, as far as I think it's bad form, and I think it sends out mixed messages.
And what did you think about what happened in court today?
I'm actually pleased about that, especially because of how your family is okay with it. Like you said, you know, it's very important to walk your talk. You talk about forgiveness and compassion, especially because this young man really does feel remorse. So your heart does go out to him. You know, you realize that he made a just an unbelievable mistake. That, you know, one that he can never take back. You know, so he's respectful. He's apologized, and like you said, you're not out for an eye for an eye type of thing. You're not out for vengeance.
Nope.
You're out
right.
for healing. And if people were to concentrate more on healing, then people would move on from what happens to them in life more. Forgiveness and healing are so important to having a happy life, because when you can move yourself in that direction, you stop being a victim. And
that's right.
It doesn't make what happened to you not happen, but what it does is it makes it so that it doesn't continue injuring you. Whatever injuries you sustain, that's the injuries you sustain. But that doesn't mean you can't have a happy life. It doesn't you still can't do something good and enjoy yourself and want to get up in the morning. You know, but that's up to you. You can also stay in victim mode for the rest of your life and just have a miserable existence. You know, that really is people's choice. And when you can forgive somebody, and especially when somebody's asking for forgiveness, when somebody actually puts it out there, it makes it a little bit easier. But you can even forgive someone who doesn't even care to ask for forgiveness when you realize that they're so damaged that they can't even feel remorse. How sad is that? For someone to do something horrific and to not even feel remorse, they have to be really, really damaged to even to go there or to not to go there, as the case may be. You know, and when you can feel forgiveness and compassion for the perpetrator of something that you experienced, that is extremely healing. So I applaud you and your family. Like I said, you know, like you're walking your talk, you know, you teach one thing and then you act on it. And that's so important, because you can actually help people by your example, by your family's example. You know, so I applaud you.
Well, that's the way I feel. And I must tell you, we left there today. We left the courthouse. We went to the flea market to fix David's necklace with my favorite guy at the flea market, and we had the nicest day. There was no stress. We didn't feel stress. We didn't feel disappointment. We didn't feel anger. We both said, we got up here, and I dropped Valerie off, and she says, "Mom, thanks. It was really a nice day." And I said, "It was nice, wasn't it?" Even though it started out kind of foreboding, because we knew what we were going to deal with and everything.
Right.
We felt good about it. And it does make a difference. And
it
people who
doesn't.
Don't believe it should try it.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people think, like forgiveness, it means they're weak. I mean, I've heard comments like this before.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I think it actually takes more strength to be forgiving, because it takes the strength of character. So it's actually the opposite. Somebody who can forgive, somebody who can kind of like forgive and move on and allow a situation to heal is, number one, much stronger than someone that holds. It's actually easy to hold on to anger, because it's the path of least resistance.
Yeah,
you
know? You're right.
It doesn't take effort to stay there and just wallow. But why would you do that when just a little bit of effort can actually start giving you your life back? And yet
and free you.
Stay there.
free you.
Yep.
Yeah, who wants to stay locked in a place like that? My good Lord. Not me.
You know.
Not me. There's too many other crappy things that happen in a day. Hanging on to stuff like that has never served me very well. I matter of fact, you know that I'm having a little struggle with my brother and my sister right now, and I am upset with them. And I've waited very patiently for them to come to their senses, and they have called me a few times, but not just to pretend like nothing happened. And I almost feel like, you know, after all these years, I kind of like have to, I don't know, take a stand and teach them a lesson that it's not okay to behave like that. And yet, probably the only one who's torn apart about it is me.
I know what you mean.
Yes, I know you know what I mean. And I think that it's a strange thing, but, you know, you do have to pick your battles, that's for sure. And you do have to realize what's important and what isn't important. And, of course, I've certainly counseled thousands of people about fighting with family members or having bad blood between family members, that it doesn't serve anybody and it's not good for you, and just get over it. So in this instant, I am not doing what I have always said I would do, and that bothers me as well. So I am, you know, I'm taking a stand, and I don't have anything against taking stands if they're worthwhile and if you really feel self-righteous enough about something like that so that you think you're going to do more damage to yourself if you swallow it rather than dealing with it. And that's what I'd like to do here. Obviously, I'd like it to be over and like to come to, you know, a good place. These are, you know, my siblings, whom I love very much, who I helped raise, who mean an awful lot to me. You know that. And but yet, I almost feel like it's my responsibility to get them to understand that it's not okay to behave like that.
Well, I don't think it's a little bit more complicated also. We're not talking about a single incident on a person that's not part of your life, you know, somebody that you have a history with, okay? What I'm talking about, people who go into victim mode, is that people who have had something happen to them, somebody perpetrated an act, even a criminal act on them, or some act of unkindness, a co-worker or something like that, and they can't let it go. They go into victim mode until the point where they're injuring themselves. When you're talking about a friend or a family member that repeatedly does something that's unkind, then yes, it's a different scenario that I was discussing, because then things like educating them, teaching them to be better people, that almost comes into your role as well. You know what I'm saying? So it's so pride in that particular instance. And you're not feeling like a victim because you're upset with not being treated properly. You're reacting out of a sense that, you know, you're very consistent, you're always there when somebody needs you, and you know, and if there's any conduct out there that's not consistent coming back to you, it's not appropriate. And you want everybody that's in your close circle, everybody that's got your name on them, you want them to act appropriate.
Yep, that's it. So you got it right on the nose.
Down to that.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I take great pride in knowing that we all have that kind of connection, just like I do with my friends. That's
exactly.
I matter of fact, some people would say that's a bit of a sin in itself, being that prideful about the people that you care about and knowing that they're always there for one another. But there is a lot of pride involved in that. And I do feel very strongly about family members knowing that we all have each other's back no matter what. And obviously, I would still be there if something were to arise. But I would like, you know, some growing up to be done, I guess.
Right. Well, taking pride in yourself and in those in your circle is healthy and appropriate. When people talk about pride being sinful, is when your pride, like false pride,
when your pride is such that it would make you not do something because, oh, well, what would other people think if I stepped in and vouched for this person, you know, because of the negative publicity? You know, that's like false pride. That's when pride is damaging or sinful or inappropriate, or when your pride makes you feel that you're better than other people. So that type of pride would be sinful, but not just healthy, simple pride.
That's where I'm at as well, and that's what I think is important. We're down to a few minutes, and I promised every night I would talk a little bit more about our big event, and I'm happy to say that after the show last night, Gary messaged me, and he's already talked to the producers and all the people involved with the Bully movie, and they've given him, the go-ahead to come here for the for our event and to help
us.
And I did talk today to the assistant state attorney, and if I can work out the dates so it's a time when she's at home, she would love to come and be one of our speakers. And, of course, because she is so involved in the kids part of the judicial system, it will be invaluable to have her here and talking to the kids and answering questions from parents and what have you. And it's still in my plan to speak to all of the local schools, and I will start doing that next week, and of course organizing what it will take for us to be able to use the park that's over here.
I'll pull the agenda together for you on Sunday so that you've got that to work with next week, and then at least I'll put the outline together for you, and then because I'm going to be seeing you, was it Saturday night or Sunday? When am I
Saturday
seeing you?
Saturday night. Okay. We'll see each other. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll try to do it Saturday during the day and bring it with me then, so at least I can get you something just as a rough draft to get started with.
Okay, that will be good.
And then we can discuss a date to shoot for, because as soon as we know the venue date, then we can start locking some things in. So we'll look at the date, and then you kind of like work towards that. But there's a little bit of work behind. You don't want to make it too close, but you don't want to make it too far away either. So we're going to have to come up with something that's going to be workable, and also with your spring theme that we've got
for new beginnings, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to be talking about that a little bit Saturday.
Yeah, I am too. I'm for those of you out there listening, if you live in the vicinity, we are going to a friend's special dinner party. It's all vegan raw cuisine with an Italian theme, and it's Rita Romano. She is the author of Dining in the Raw. She is a renowned chef and lifestyle coach for the raw food lifestyle, but she's a bit of a she's not just a raw food chef. She's more like a
She's
more of a gourmet chef. She uses things that, if you're familiar with places like Hippocrates Health Institute or even Living Light and places like that, she's a little bit more open to using specific things that you wouldn't be invited to eat if you were on a real detox kind of a program. So her food is delicious, and I've eaten with her many, many times. She puts out a beautiful, beautiful spread. So if anybody's interested in going to that and meeting some of us people who appreciate that lifestyle, let me know on Facebook or call me on the radio, and I'd be happy to let you know about it. So I guess that's it for tonight. I am, I'm happy about what happened for my family in court today. And I already started getting well wishes on Facebook, and I appreciate that. Thank you all. And we will talk again tomorrow night. You got anything else you want to talk about, Shell? We got a few seconds.
No, you have my well wishes for what happened today in court. Also, let Val and Mike and Mikey all know that I'm very, very proud of them,
And I send them my love and congratulations. I'm glad that at least this moved forward in a positive way for everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. One more part of this part of our lives has finished nicely. So,
exactly.
All right, everybody. Love you, Shelley. Love all of you. From my heart to yours, this is Renee. Good night and God bless. Good night, Miss Shelley.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.
Well, Jumping, come and catch and shake your hands. I mean the Jordan jumping. Dough, gives it to his boss, follow the trail and make the bus. That was
Still telling me it's in use.
Once you send on the.
Spikes. Mine's hung up in my bed in my office. Trying to use the phone and this phone won't let me use it, so I must have left this one on.